Thank you so much for the Clinical Congress, for the opportunity to present about nutrition updates. Dr. May and Dr. Barnes, thank you so much, and my illustrious colleagues. I have no relevant disclosures. I would say that I am an advocate for my patients being able to eat. I figure if we eat every day, they should eat also. So remember that. Today, we'd like to go through some of the guidelines based upon the ASPEN and the Society of Critical Care Medicine Nutritional Guidelines. We'll first start off with a case scenario. We have a 46-year-old male with a history of hypertension presented to the emergency department with a three-day history of increasing abdominal pain that has become diffuse. The pain is associated with several episodes of nausea and bilious emesis. He also admits to non-bloody diarrhea alternating with constipation over the past week. He denied fever or chills and no recent travel out of the United States. On physical examination, his abdomen was distended, diffusely tender, with hypoactive bowel sounds. Radiographic findings of the abdomen revealed dilated loops of bowel with multiple air fluid levels. He was taken to the operating room for exploratory laparotomy and lysis of adhesions with a resection of 25 centimeters segment of jejunum and primary anastomosis, just a night on call for acute care surgery. So for this patient, when should you initiate nutritional support? While the patient is on escalating pressors, within 48 hours of injury, following completion of antibiotics, or after 7 days of conventional management? Of course, let's start it early, within 48 hours of injury. There are lots of myths out there. Surgeons have been known throughout decades to hold the tube feeds, to hold the nutritional supplementation for fear of the dreaded intestinal anastomotic breakdown. It is a myth. There is no evidence to say that early nutrition will affect our anastomoses and cause them to fail. Quite the contrary. Early enteral nutrition makes anastomoses stronger. There is greater collagen and fibrin deposition. This was seen in a meta-analysis of early enteral nutrition versus standard therapy. There were over 1,200 patients, and there was a reduction of 45% in relative odds of total postoperative complications with early enteral nutrition. Why wouldn't we feed them? No worsening side effects or anastomotic dehiscence was proven. This favors early feeding. So the myth is busted. There is not an increased leak. There is no evidence of increased breakdown of gastrointestinal anastomoses when enteral nutrition is started early. So this patient, should we start them if they're severely malnourished? Should they be moved towards a goal within 24 to 48 hours? Of course we should. The goal of enteral nutrition should be to provide greater than 80% of the estimated or calculated goal energy and protein within 48 to 72 hours. Now, there's a group where we start the trophic feeds. It helps us feel better. We feel like we're giving a little snack and that they should do okay. Now, that works in the person who is a low to moderate risk, but not so much in the critically ill, the severely malnourished patient. So, there was a study done that not a lot of patients, but there was about 207 patients who received enteral nutrition only, and they received less than 50% of their caloric and protein needs. Their results show that 25% developed infection after 72 hours. So this is not only, this can prolong patients' hospital stays and cause worse outcomes if we do not feed them. So then we moved on to the PERMIT trial, where we looked at permissive underfeeding or standard enteral feeding in the critically ill adults. Now, this was different from the study that I just spoke about because they chose to reduce non-protein calories and kept the proteins similar in each group. So for the permissive underfeeding, they provided them 40 to 60% of their calculated caloric requirements versus the standard, which was 70 to 100% with similar protein intake. And in their conclusion, they identified that the outcomes were not different than full feeds, mortality was similar, and there was no serious adverse events. So trickle feeds are okay as long as you keep that protein going. So remember, get the protein in. So for our myth regarding nutrition and getting to the goal, over 24 to 48 hours, protein is the most important that we have to consider. So this same patient, postoperatively, he becomes progressively hypotensive despite volume resuscitation and a vasopressor is added. Maybe two, maybe three if you like angiotensin II. And then the question becomes, when should nutritional support be initiated? Once on minimal de-escalating dose of pressor, within 48 hours of injury, following completion of antibiotics, or after 7 days of conventional management? Once they're on minimal de-escalating doses of pressors is the correct answer. In the setting of hemodynamic compromise or instability, you want to make sure that the patient is fully resuscitated before you initiate nutrition. What is that number that you should look for? Enteral nutrition should be withheld in patients who are hypotensive with a MAP less than 50. If there's initiation of catecholamine agents or escalation, because you don't know which way they may go, and by the time you come back to check and you're on a couple of patients down the road, you may have found out that they've escalated while they were on tube feeds. So where does this come from? What evidence do we have about ischemic bowel and pressors? Well, there were some studies that were done that looked at the incidence of ischemic bowel in the ICU population. It found it to be about less than 1%, and in the burn ICU, about 0.2%. So this study had looked at, if they did burn ICU patients plus small bowel feeding, they found that their incidence of ischemic bowel rose to almost 4%. So in the setting of hemodynamic compromise or instability, enteral nutrition should be withheld until the patient is fully resuscitated and or stable. Now, you can provide enteral nutrition with caution if they're on chronic, stable, low doses of vasopressors and less than 0.05 mics per kg per minute. Why do we want to push this enteral nutrition? Because we know it benefits our patients. There is a postprandial hyperemic response with enteral nutrition. The gut is better perfused, the splenic circulation is more perfused when you start to feed the patient. And there's a nice balance between increased oxygen consumption and oxygen delivery that balances out and decreases bacterial translocation. So it truly favors early enteral nutrition. Now, when we think of the patient who may have intestinal compromise, and they may be at risk for intestinal ischemia, we want to make sure that we're monitoring for abdominal distension, increased gastric residuals, decreased stool inflatus, hypoactive bowel sounds, and increasing metabolic acidemia. So this patient who had the vasopressors is now stable. He's on chronic stable low-dose pressors. Tube feeds were initiated, and nutritional markers were now ordered because we have to have a way to monitor how well we're doing with our nutrition. So which nutritional markers should we use in the critically ill? Now, traditional nutritional surrogate markers like albumin, prealbumin, transferrin, retinal binding protein have been used to assess nutritional status, but are they validated in the critically ill? They are not. Traditional nutrition surrogates reflect the acute phase response, increased vascular permeability, and reprioritization of hepatic protein synthesis. Also, arthropometrics are not reliable in the assessment of nutritional status or adequacy of nutrition therapy. Well, what about indirect calorimetry? It is the gold standard, of course. So the gold standard will determine the calorie needs in this clinical setting, but it's not very reliable in our ICU patients, who are often on higher O2 requirements, greater than 60%. And do your patients have chest tubes? Of course they do. Well, that's not going to work out very well for that indirect calorimetry. So traditional nutrition surrogate markers to assess nutrition status are not validated in the critically ill. So what should we use? Indirect calorimetry is not accessible or appropriate in our patient population. Well, let's use our published predictive equations, our weight-based equations, 25 to 30 kilocalories per kg per day to determine our energy requirements. And then our protein goals between 1.5 to 2 grams per kg per day. Future directions are putting us in the realm of the CT scan, which our patients often get when they come through the door, come on their way to the ICU, or using our ultrasound machines to try to help determine the muscle thickness. more to follow on that in the future. Enteral nutritional pearls for you to take home. Bowel sounds and evidence of bowel function is not required for the initiation of enteral nutrition. Gastric residuals should not be used to assess tolerance or as a marker for aspiration risk. Do not hold for enteral nutrition for gastric residuals less than 500 mL, and do implement enteral nutrition feeding protocols. One like this, you give a volume-based feeding protocol. You set a goal for the day, you target it. You stop it for something, you make it up somewhere along the road, down the road, so you can get to that target by the end of the day. Restrict the use of immune-modulating formulas to TB and perioperative ICU patients, and do consider a fermentable soluble fiber additive with a standard enteral nutrition formula in stable ICU patients. Do not routinely use probiotics in the critically ill. Do provide antioxidant vitamins and trace minerals in safe doses, and do not add supplemental glutamine routinely. So in the specific disease states that we might see, the trauma patient, you want to start your enteral nutrition early with a high-protein polymeric diet and consider an immune-modulating formula with arginine and fish oils. For the open abdomen, in the absence of a bowel injury, start enteral nutrition within 24 to 48 hours post-injury. And make sure, if you, for that open abdomen, that you add on additional protein, 15 to 30 grams for the liter of the exudative lost. In the burn patients, increase your protein needs and start your nutrition 4 to 6 hours. Don't even wait 24 hours. Start it early. Get it going. And then based upon expert consensus, attempt enteral nutrition even with a difficult post-op course. Delay your parenteral nutrition 5 to 7 days if enteral nutrition is not feasible. And when a diet is advanced, please, 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 clear liquids to full liquids to soft, to mechanical soft, to a regular diet. Throw it out of your armamentarium. Just put them on solid foods and keep it moving. Thank you very much for the opportunity.